The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
You posted this morning about Iran. You said that they've taken too long to get to a deal, and I want to make sure I quote you correctly. You said that now they will have to pay the price. Yeah. What did you mean by that specifically?
Well, we're going to be attacking them very hard.
Resuming bombing?
We are. Based on the helicopter, I guess we have the right to do that. And I gave them a break at the request of Pakistan. The field marshal and the prime minister of Pakistan are great. We stopped them from going to war with India. You would have had a nuclear war if it wasn't for me. But they became friendly to me, very friendly, and they're close to Iran, and they work, and they still are working on trying them to do what's right. But we want a deal that's meaningful. We want a deal that works. We don't want to just have a Barack Hussein Obama deal, JCPOA, the worst deal. But we hit them hard yesterday, and we're going to hit them again hard today, in case you miss it, in case you don't turn on your television set. And we'll see what happens with the deal. We were really close to a deal, but they keep tapping us along. They keep playing us for suckers because, you know what? They dealt with some very stupid presidents. I have to say that. I'm embarrassed to say it. Some very stupid people were sitting here.
So the war is back on. So close to a deal. We're back and forth and back and forth, exchanging fire now. The ceasefire, it didn't hold for very long. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. Lots and lots to get to. A little bit of housekeeping here at the start. We've got a campaign, a personal appearance campaign, a Bible lecture in Charlotte, North Carolina, coming up this Sunday afternoon. And that'll be followed by a Celtic Throne 2 performance, also in Charlotte, Sunday night. So I'll be able to perhaps see some of you at the Charlotte performance or the campaign, too. So that's coming up this weekend. We'll be flying out tomorrow afternoon after the show. So if all goes well, I'll be doing the program again tomorrow. Speaking of Celtic Throne, just go to the website, CelticThrone.com. We've got Charlotte Sunday. Today, actually, is Virginia Beach. So if you're in Virginia, if you're in the general vicinity, go to CelticThrone.com and make sure you secure your seats for tonight's performance. Then next week, what's next week? Charlotte, Augusta, Georgia. That's next Thursday, week from today. So Georgia, the Carolinas, Virginia. If you're out there, if you're paying attention, make sure that you go to CelticThrone.com to learn what you need to learn about buying tickets to the show. You can see the website right there. Just click on one of those tabs, the city nearest you, and come out and support the troop. They're on the road. There's a big group of them. I think it's more than 50. I can't remember the numbers each year from one year to the next, but it's a big group, and we take a lot of our food with us, so it's a pretty big production. And we look for ways every year to try to make it more economical because it's not this big money-making scheme. The goal typically is to just try to break even. But what a wonderful show. Everyone who sees it, they're just shocked by how good it is. And they wonder, how come I haven't heard of this? In fact, I should also mention that, you know, as it is with the no-name production, it was anyway several years ago, but it's becoming better known. We contract with venues and then we have to try to sell the seats, and of course the arena gets its cut, or the auditorium gets its cut, and then we get our cut. But we've had, more recently, we've had promoters contact us, and we've even had a venue contact us and ask about, you know, what's our going rate, what's our flat fee, which would leave it on them to sell the tickets, and we would just get the flat fee going in. So that's a sign that we're getting more publicity, and that we're even attracting the attention of some promoters that think there's a lot to be said for this particular production. This, too, this is the latest issue of the Trumpet magazine. You can see there on the cover, I covered it up, but How America Became Great. We're going to be talking about this for the next couple, 3 weeks, because we're coming right up to America's birthday. And as Mr. Livingston and I were discussing the other day, there was earlier this year, there's quite a lot of hoopla, quite a lot of statements about how this is going to be the biggest, the best ever. It's 250 years. And I'm not sure maybe my finger's not to the pulse, but it seems like that excitement has died down. In fact, there's a story. Maybe I can just fast forward because it's been in my notes for a couple of weeks now. The American exceptionalism. I'm just wondering. There's celebrations planned, and is America really excited about it? Just your average, typical Joe. Are they excited about 250 years? You might have seen the story yesterday. The guy on the bus, 41-year-old in New York City. That's the site of the greatest, you know, NBA championship and the greatest arena in the world. He's 41 years old. He turns around and he tells a black teenager, "Can you turn your phone down? You're blaring it on the bus here." Probably had some profanity mixed in. And the teenager shot him in the belly. And the man died soon after at the hospital. You can't even tell. And of course, then you have the media bending over backwards to not reveal the race of the teenager. What a world. Do you think people, just on the whole, do you think people are excited about America's birthday? Most people are just glued to their screens. And that ties in with what we wanted to talk about in the second half of today's show. Our reading proficiency in school, it's plummeting. Math scores going down. What is happening to our nation? What's happening to our people? Why are so many people just emotionally, spiritually unhinged and ready to pull out a gun or a knife if someone touches you? Obama, for his part, he came along, you'll remember, some of you, and talked about how, you know, America's history, it's not so exceptional. I mean, yes, we're exceptional, just like every other country is exceptional. This is the Associated Press. As the U.S. prepares for an extravagant celebration of its founding principles, fewer Americans see their country as exceptional, a new poll finds. Well, you have to give President Trump some credit. He's a patriot. He loves his country. That's more than you can say for the dear leader. But when he came in, especially the second time, going back to the inauguration last year, the country was unified. The country was ready to party. The country was ready to celebrate the World Cup, the 250 years, the religious revival or resurgence. And yet, what's the reality? What are we seeing? What's happening on the ground? It's just one horrific event after another, like I covered on yesterday's show. And God wants us to learn from these events. These smaller scale events typify something much bigger that's about to explode. Are you ready? Are you emotionally prepared for what's coming? Hey, can you turn down your music? Bang! And he's done. He is gone. And then you've got people online saying, the comments underneath, why didn't he just keep his mouth shut? Why didn't he just mind his own business? What is wrong with people? And then there's those blaming it on the left-wing governments. Oh, so it's Hochul's fault. No, I think it actually goes deeper than that. I think the fact that we're living in a society where the family has completely broken down, it's fatherless America right now. There's no fatherly authority. And so you have teenage thugs sitting on buses carrying their firearm because, you know, they got to defend themselves from someone who's rude, from someone who corrects them, from someone who says, hey, can you move to your own bench? This is our team over here. The survey from the Associated Press highlights many Americans' feeling of unease over the future of its representative government, particularly among young people. It presents a jarring contrast as communities around the country commemorate the nation's 250th anniversary. Why are there so many jarring contrasts? Yeah, Madison Square Garden, most famous arena in the world. And then right outside, there's violence going down. Oh, yes. Only about one quarter of Americans say the U.S. stands above all other countries in the world, a new poll finds, while 44% say it's one of the greatest countries in the world, along with some others. So there's another jarring contrast. A lot of people think it is, a lot of people think it isn't. How America became great. That's our position. America did become great. America did become the single greatest superpower in the history of the world. Why? That's where they're lost. That's where they're blind. They don't realize that these blessings from God are exactly that. They came from God because of promises made to Abraham. It's not because of American ingenuity. It's not because of our people. Look at what our people are doing to each other. God gifted these blessings upon us. He opened up the windows of heaven and just poured out his blessings. And what have we done with them? Well, in most cases, we've squandered them away. In nearly every case, we haven't been thankful. We haven't been appreciative. We don't give God credit. Look at what it says in Romans 1 sometime, where God says, look, because you were ungrateful, you didn't give thanks. Well, I just gave you over to a reprobate mind, a worthless mind. That's what we're seeing on the news every day. A lot of worthless human reasoning that amounts to nothing. There's no productivity. There's no fruit. There's no unifying force. It's all about just get what you get. If you're disrespected, shoot them up. Who knows what happened in Belfast? I saw a tweet where it said the victim that had his eyes gouged out and his face slashed was actually helping the perpetrator move into the neighborhood a few days earlier. What's that all about? Someone helps you? Someone welcomes you? And that's the thanks they get? 5 stab wounds? He's barely living? He's barely alive? He's disfigured for the rest of his life now? This is quite a world. It's certainly not God's world. In my father's article, this is from 2019, he's talking about Amos telling us the lion is roaring. That's from Amos 3. It says, when you see what's happening in the nations of Israel, how can you not prophesy? How can you know all that God has revealed and keep quiet? We have to sound the alarm. We have to cry aloud. My father said, this is 2019, the world is getting sicker and sicker. That was in 2019, January. And then what happened the very next year? Well, we had the COVID plague, which showed that the world was getting sicker and sicker, not because of the COVID virus, but because of how it targeted sick people. People getting sicker and sicker. Now that's in the physical realm. But what happens? What happens when, just to carry on with the analogy, what happens when we're getting sicker and sicker morally and spiritually? Well, we leave ourselves exposed to plagues, like COVID in the spiritual sense. We leave ourselves exposed to curses. We're not prepared for when violence explodes in our faces. The world's getting sicker and sicker. Those who don't have God's hope just want to escape it. They have their sports and entertainment. They jump from one distraction to another as an escape. They won't be able to do so for much longer. That's what we're doing. We're jumping from one distraction to another as an escape. Another round of bombs in Iran. How many young people, or any people for that matter, are concerned about that or even think about that? Look, you've got Madison Square Garden. You've got Celebrity Row at the basketball games. You've got movies galore. You've got Netflix. It's a time of euphoria. You can see why, as Paul said, that when it happens suddenly, it's going to be sudden. People are going to be caught totally unawares. What good is the screen? What good is the smartphone when bombs start falling from heaven above? It's happening in Iran. Are we going to sit here in all of our pious self-righteousness and say it could never happen here? Well, zoom in to the streets of New York or wherever and see what's happening on a smaller scale. You can see where this is leading, as I said yesterday on the show. Another article, this is from 2008, almost 20 years ago. My father said, "Do you see how America is falling apart? How our dollar's collapsing? How our alliances are fracturing?" Our alliances, they're fracturing. There's an article in the Times of Israel, it's in my notes as well, about whether or not Trump is tired of Bibi. And then it talks about the Israelis being tired of Bibi. Here he's as my father has said, he's the closest thing we have in the world to Winston Churchill. And I know everyone in the media hates Bibi, so you have to take, you have to take these stories with an element of caution. But still, for Trump to say, "Oh yeah, Erdogan, he is my very good friend," and then to get on the phone with Bibi and start cursing him out, something's wrong with this picture. Erdogan's a Jew hater. Erdogan is spouting propaganda about the so-called genocide in Gaza. And that's President Trump's very dear friend. Meanwhile, Bibi and the Israelis, they're fighting for their survival. They're living in a neighborhood where every neighbor hates them. And they're drawing knives because they want to murder Jews. They want to obliterate the Israeli state. If there's anything that, as I said a number of weeks ago, if there's anything that should have united the world around the United States and Israel, it would be going after the number one state sponsor of terrorism. And yet it's divided the world all the more. And it's leaving America on an island. And you've got Donald Trump arguing back and forth with the legacy media. "We've obliterated them. We've destroyed their missile defense. We've destroyed their army." And yet the New York Times wants to say that Iran's actually fighting back. They're not. Well, I mean, you just said yourself that the war continues. The Tomahawk missiles continue to go. Now we're going to take over, I forget the name of the little island. It appears to be escalating, just listening to President Trump himself. That's big scale. Then you look at small scale in Belfast, in New York City. Terrifying times if you didn't understand the truth of the Bible. If you're not a student of Bible prophecy, this article says, "Our people don't have the will to confront these challenges. They're too concerned about their entertainment, their sports, their pornography. They do not want to be distracted by war or saving their nation or obeying God." That's from a 2008 article. It sounds to me like that would make for a pretty good article to review ahead of the 250-year anniversary of America's founding. What a different world we're living in today. Coming back to the news. Sorry, I got a little distracted there. Truth Social, this is President Trump's statement. Just today or maybe yesterday, the United States will be hitting Iran, whose Navy, Air Force, radar, anti-aircraft, and all other forms of defense, together with most of its offensive capability, are gone. Well, if it's gone, why are you hitting them again? And here you've got other reports. Iran's shutting down Hormuz completely. How can they shut it down without a Navy, an Air Force, radar, anti-aircraft, and all other forms of defense? How then can Iran shut down that all-important strait? So the truth, I know, it's somewhere in the middle of what President Trump is saying and what the New York Times is saying. But why do we have to exaggerate? Why do we have to have so much propaganda that we just have to, you know, fight our way through? Truth fails, like Isaiah said. You have to really be a student, in this case, a student of world news, news gathering. Luke 21 and verse 36 says to watch and pray always. We've got to watch world events, but we better pray as well, because otherwise we're going to be duped by liars, by deceivers, by accusers. At some point in the not-too-distant future, we'll be taking Karg Island, there we go, and other oil infrastructure points and assume total control of their oil and gas markets. So we'll see if this is bluffing. Okay, we'll find out soon enough, I guess. But he said, at least this morning, he said, we're going to pull another Venezuela, this time in Iran. And you know what? That's really going to make the world fall in love with America. I think Bible prophecy indicates that this won't happen because Iran is the king of the South. There is some power left in Iran. There is influence left in Iran. There's a reason Israel wants to continue with this battle, because Israel knows they've got to be completely blotted out, the mullahs, this terrorist network, or else it'll just reemerge. They have too many helpers. I mean, President Trump, I forget who it was, Pakistan maybe? He mentioned it in the cold open, but he said, yeah, we're good friends with them. They're also good friends with Iran. So this is the world we live in. Erdogan hates Bibi. He won't even go to the meeting that Bibi is in. He can't do it. He hates him. He hates Jews. He says the Jews have killed 73,000 Gazans. He just lies and lies and lies. And he's a very good friend of President Trump, the President of the United States. What did my father say in that article? Our alliances are severing. You can see it. You can see it happening. The Telegraph says the threats represent a dramatic escalation following 3 days of tit-for-tat strikes between the U.S. and Iran. The first since the April ceasefire. So the ceasefire didn't hold. Here we are in June, middle of June. The April ceasefire is unraveling. And then you have this story. Is Israel, or rather, is President Trump tired of Bibi? On Monday night, Trump suggested without any evidence that Prime Minister Netanyahu might not run for re-election this year. I don't know. He's had an amazing career, Trump said, according to a Tuesday post on X. Does he want to continue? Because, you know, he's a wartime president. We will very shortly win the war one way or the other. And you know he's a wartime prime minister. The article says, to be clear, the answer to Trump's question is a resounding yes. Netanyahu has led Israel nearly uninterruptedly since 2009, has run in successive elections, and is already actively campaigning in this one. As the old adage goes, there are three certainties in life: death, taxes, and that Benjamin Netanyahu will run for prime minister. So the Times of Israel, that's an Israeli outlet. He's going to be running. Don't worry. But is President Trump saying that statement that he made about Bibi possibly not running? Is he saying it hopefully? That's what some are reading into. A survey released on Tuesday found that 61% of Israelis don't want Netanyahu to run. That overall statistic isn't really news, especially since the Hamas-led attack on October 7. Most Israelis haven't approved of the prime minister who was in office when it occurred. Even among Netanyahu's faithful, many don't want him to run. Well, that's probably true, but there's a lot of people who also don't see any better alternatives. And they know their survival is at stake. And they know Netanyahu, for all of his faults, at least he'll fight. At least he'll fight. You can't say that about a lot of other Israeli leaders. What's behind this? Whether it's coming from Trump or the Israeli people or Erdogan or Iran. My father has said Bibi's the greatest leader in the world today. So, if that's true, then what does that automatically make him? Well, one of the biggest targets in the eyes of the devil. If he's a great leader, if he'll stand up and fight, we got to take him out. Because the devil is leading this world to tribulation, great tribulation. Jeremiah 30 says it's Jacob's trouble. The tribulation is going to hit Jacob, the nations of Jacob in particular. That would be the United States and Britain. And yes, also little Judah, the little Israeli state in the Middle East. If you stand up and fight against these Jew-hating enemies, well, that makes you a bigger target in the eyes of the devil. Listen to what President Trump said yesterday in the Oval Office, clip 6.
Turkish President Erdogan keeps threatening Israel. Do you think there's a chance of a conflict between Israel and Turkey, and will you sell F-35 to Turkey?
Well, you know, he's a very good friend of mine, and we've worked very well together. I like him a lot. I'm not supposed to say that because the press will say, oh, he likes Erdogan. No, he's a hell of a leader and a strong person, very strong person. I haven't heard that at all. If I did, I'd call him, and I think I'd make sure that things were fine. I don't think that will happen with Turkey. Not as long as I'm president, because he respects me and I respect him. But beyond that, we have a good friendship. So, you know, listen.
Wow. I mean, what a statement. I respect him. We have a good relationship. He's a strong person. He's a great leader. I like him. He's a good friend. Over the years, I'm sure President Trump has had some complimentary things to say about Bibi Netanyahu. I mean, there's one statement in that Times of Israel article. But has he ever strung together that many compliments about Benjamin Netanyahu in just one little statement, one little paragraph? I don't know. I don't know enough. But to say that about Erdogan, and then to have all these reports, it seems now every 2-3 weeks, I got on the phone and F-bombs were flying at Bibi, telling him to calm down, telling him to dial back in Lebanon, telling him to stop with the missiles in Iran. That's an upside-down world, I think. This is Erdogan speaking to Turkish Parliament on June 10th, just yesterday, I guess it is, clip 7.
Look, 73,000 innocent people have been slaughtered in Gaza before the eyes of the whole world. This genocide continues both in terms of its massacre scale and its inhumane isolation. Israel, which has carried out the bloodiest genocide in human history, has simultaneously attacked Iran, and not content with that, has begun to occupy Lebanon.
That's a translator, obviously, but the bloodiest genocide in history, the deadliest genocide in history, has he heard of the Holocaust? Don't even get me started on the 73,000. He probably got that from the UN. Of course, they hate the Jews too. The deadliest genocide in history. That's the prime minister or whatever they're called in Turkey. Erdogan, President Trump's very dear friend. A dear, dear friend. He respects him. He loves him. It's a close friendship. He's strong. He's a great leader. And also he hates Jews. And also he spreads propaganda and lies. The bloodiest genocide in human history. There you go. Here's another bit from his address to Parliament, clip 8.
the Zionist administration is truly a troublemaker, a factory of discord, constantly generating unrest across a vast geography. Unfortunately, the world is failing to show the necessary reaction to Israel's lawless, rule-breaking policies that recognize no principles, values, or borders. Under the current government, Israel has become increasingly emboldened, turning into a threat not only to the region, but to all of humanity. The attacks by Netanyahu and his network of murderers against Syria and Lebanon have reached a point that threatens Turkey as much as these two brotherly countries.
Yeah, he's a pro-Hezbollah supporter. The Syrian regime. Israel's now threatening Turkey, evidently. Just, your normal parliamentary address yesterday. Going on in Turkey, one last one, clip 9.
My dear friends, Israel, emboldened by the silence of the international community, is acting extremely recklessly, preventing our region from achieving total peace, stability, and security. Bringing Israel back within the bounds of the law has now become a common cause for all of humanity, not just for certain countries. The attacks on Iran and Lebanon have created a negative impact not only on the countries in the region, but also on a global scale. Therefore, Israel's aggressive stance is a threat to humanity along with our region. 85 years ago, the silence and inaction in the face of Hitler led to the loss of 80 million lives worldwide. All of humanity paid the price for the madness of a bloodthirsty maniac. Today, the same mistake is being repeated. The genocides committed by the butcher of Gaza, Netanyahu, and his cabinet are being watched with the same great silence and inaction as was done with Hitler. Israel must be stopped. This is the duty of humanity and the front of humanity. History must not be allowed to repeat itself. Despite all of Israel's sabotage, Turkey will do its utmost to establish peace and stability in its region.
Bibi Titler, the butcher of Gaza, history is repeating itself. We've got to stop Hitler. This is coming from President Trump's very dear friend, Erdogan. I don't know how to pronounce his first name. I should have checked that. But Erdogan's easy enough. His very dear friend. What about the laugh out loud comedic line that Israel's emboldened by the silence of the international community? Can you believe this? Bibi can't blow his nose without the international community accusing him of trying to spread a new COVID strain or something. They can't do anything outside of the scrutiny of the so-called international community that hates them some Jews. Jew hatred worldwide. This is why Israel can only go so far into Gaza. This is why Israel can only go so far into Iran or Lebanon. Because of the international community. Headed up, by the way, by President Trump. President Trump and his dear friend Erdogan from Turkey. Is that the kind of friend that you want or need? We were discussing just the vanity, the pride, the arrogance in leaders today, and just how dangerous it is. When you go forward, it doesn't matter what you say from one day to the next. It's a deal. Ceasefire's on, the war continues, we're taking over the oil fields. It doesn't matter if it contradicts or if there's any kind of cognitive dissonance, it's fueled by pride. If I say it, it's right. If I say it, it must be true. That is a dangerous, dangerous mindset. And that's what's leading to an explosion that will engulf the world. It's no longer going to be on the streets, just the streets of Belfast or New York City. But those isolated incidents, seemingly, they typify what's going to happen on a grand scale. And it's coming soon. And God wants us to be emotionally and spiritually prepared for it. Are you? Are you ready for what's coming? You're seeing human nature in all of its ugly colors. You're seeing 2 Timothy 3 verses 1 through 5 play out every day. You're seeing Revelation 12, 9 every day. The whole world is deceived. You're seeing Ephesians 2 and verse 2 every day. The prince of the power of the air. You see the devil's thinking, his reasoning every day. That's why we have to plug into the Bible. That's why we have to reason together with God. Otherwise, we're not going to think straight. We're not going to have a sound mind. We're going to have high-mindedness. Then you look at the next segment I want to get into. We'll do it after the break. It's not like the devil's just out there trying to get our focus off the right target or trying to get us just to be biased against the Bible or religion or God or whatever. He's taking it much farther than that. He wants to dumb us down. He wants to bury us intellectually as well so that we hardly have a fiber, a cell left in our brain to actually seek out the truth. And so he goes after education, especially in the West. How prepared are you to receive the truth of God, to study the Holy Bible, to order literature on our programs so that you can learn even more about the Bible if you can hardly read? There's more and more people falling into that category, as we'll get into in the next segment. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Celtic Throne is back on tour. This summer, 15 cities, 8 states, one unforgettable experience. Experience this revolutionary new show, an electrifying fusion of Irish dance, music, theater, and cinema. Experience the show audiences worldwide are raving about.
Absolutely fantastic.
I'm telling you that anybody that comes to see the show is going to be mesmerised.
I've seen the River Dance and the Lord of the Dance, and they were amazing. But this blew me away. It was absolutely amazing. I'd watch it again now.
Absolutely marvellous. And I've been to see River Dance about 5 times, and this is amazing. Absolutely amazing. I love it.
It's thrilling, I think, is the best way to describe it. It stands at the side of Lord of the Dance and River Dance. It's equal partner.
Absolutely stunning. Absolutely incredible. Not in my wildest dream did I think that it could compare to the other shows, but it was amazing. Amazing.
My favourite show I've been to ever, and I've been to River Dance, Lord of the Dance, just my favourite. It was amazing.
It was amazing. Best experience ever.
Don't miss your opportunity to experience the trailblazing new Irish dance show capturing the hearts of audiences all over the world. Get show and ticket information at CelticThrone.com.
Younger generations are falling behind as reading declines. According to a survey, last year, Gen Z read fewer books than any generation. And more than one-third of kindergarten through 12th grade students said they dislike reading.
A Pepperdine University professor told Fortune, quote, it's not even an inability to critically think. It's an inability to read sentences. I feel like I'm tap dancing and having to read things aloud because there's no way that anyone read the night before.
We have Los Angeles Unified School District, second largest school district in the United States. We have parents there saying their children are on iPads all day. And now we're looking at, you know, the New York Times this fall came out with an article. 1/3 of our high school seniors are not ready for college. They are not on a, they do not have a basic reading level.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, 1/3 of our high school seniors.
It's fascinating. Listen to this. A shocking new report shows a surge of Gen Z college freshmen can't even do basic math.
The best example is UC San Diego. I mean, this is not Joe Bob Community College. This is a prestigious state university in California. 1 out of 8 of their freshman class needed remedial math, their middle school level math, or they couldn't even pass.
Middle school level
math. At UC San Diego. So if it's happening there, you have to assume it's happening everywhere.
UC San Diego has an acceptance rate of 30%.
That's right. It's an elite institution.
And some of these students can't even pass middle school math.
That's right.
That's right. That's right. Makes for some good commentary on the news circuit, but very little, if anything, being done about it. This article at the Chronicle of Higher Education, the educator talks about handing out a 20-page article to his students, and not one of them could get through it. Not one of them finished it. He's been handing it out for 5 years. He read it 10 years ago when he was a student, enjoyed it, liked it. He asked a girl, why didn't you read it? Well, she said it was too long. It was too long, and she kept losing track of what the paper was about. She couldn't keep focused for 20 pages. We're not talking about, you know, War and Peace. 20 pages. It says there's a measurable generational collapse in sustained reading and writing. As I say, it's not enough for the devil to just go after the doctrine or the teaching of God's church and try to deceive and twist and distort. He does that too, for sure. But he's also interested in a generational collapse of just basics in reading, writing, and arithmetic. Math, as you heard there in that segment or that clip. It says here in February 2024, Adam Kotzko, who teaches at the school, wrote in Slate that students who once handled 30 pages of reading per class meeting now seem intimidated by anything over 10 pages and seem to walk away from readings of as little as 20 pages with no understanding. In other words, it's getting worse. Worse and worse. Further on, it says, the 2024 educational progress results released in September show 12th grade reading scores at the lowest level recorded since the assessment began in 1992. 32% of 12th graders now score below NAEP basic in reading, meaning that in the assessment's own language, they likely cannot draw general conclusions based on concepts presented explicitly in a text. You see a lot of commentators saying that, well, if President Trump would just lay out the case for why we're striking Iran or why this is important, and he hasn't done that. But when you see some of these stories, you wonder if that's by design. Well, even if I lay it out, if I present all the facts, who's going to care about it? Who's going to listen to a 30-minute speech in the Oval Office? Are there young people out there really and truly concerned about world events? It says here, into 2000, well, maybe I can skip ahead. So when a student tells me they kept losing track of a 20-page article, I have to acknowledge that they may be describing a measurable neurological condition. And then notice this paragraph. I'll give it to you in full. It says, another reason for the decline in student reading capability is increasing reliance on generative AI, artificial intelligence. Talks about this paper from 2025, Your Brain on ChatGPT. They divided 54 participants into three groups writing SAT-style essays, one using ChatGPT, the second group using a search engine, the last group using nothing, and monitored brain activity with a 32-channel EEG. It says the ChatGPT group showed the lowest neural connectivity of the three, with up to 55% reduced connectivity compared with the brain-only group, and consistently underperformed at neuro-linguistic and behavioral levels. So again, what does this mean? 83% of LLM users could not quote a single line from essays they had written minutes earlier. When LLM group was forced to write about, was forced to write without AI in a follow-up session, their brain activity did not bounce back to baseline. The researchers coined the term cognitive debt for the lingering deficit. Cognitive debt. I mean, this is frightening. This is what's happening to our children. Writing an essay is, I mean, that's a mental exercise. It's an intellectual exercise. It stimulates brain activity. It makes us think. It's good for the mind. It's like an intellectual workout. It's like going to the gym, so to speak. And what it's saying is that if you use it or just use AI to do all of your work, it's not like you're just, you know, in the middle ground, not doing anything. You're actually hurting yourself. You're actually working against a proper workout. You're actually filling up on junk food. You are committed to a sedentary lifestyle. You can't focus on anything. It's basically saying you'd be better off doing nothing than using AI. At least when it comes to, I'm sure there's people out there going, well, AI has its purposes that can be useful. But not when it comes to writing an essay paper. It's the exercise. It's the work. It's the workout that we need. Writing an essay with AI is worse for the brain than writing no essay at all. Just look at the progression. I remember when, you know, Google was the big thing, whenever that was, 15, 20 years ago, I guess, and just cautioning our students at the college here. Look, you're getting all of these selections, these links to articles, and just make sure it comes from a reputable source. There's something to be said for not having to sift through 100 books, I suppose, but, you know, we would recommend try to base it on a book or two that you've gone through, or at least that you've gone through portions of, and then supplement it with some Google searches. And inevitably, you know, there was the over-reliance on Google searches and just cutting and pasting from a website somewhere. But now we're in the world of AI. Just type in your subject, tell them you want it to be on this, this, and this, reference it this way, give your sources and so on, and bang, it happens within a few seconds. And it's bad for your brain. It's bad for your thinking, your ability to think. Finally, it says here, when I assign analysis, I'm not trying to extract a polished product. I'm trying to put the student's mind through resistance in order to make it stronger. In other words, to get the mind to work out. Offloading the struggle to a chatbot does not free students up for higher order work. It deprives them of building the strength to do any substantial cognitive work at all. It makes you more out of shape than just sitting there and doing nothing. Not relying on AI, not doing the paper, it works against you. I noted the other day when we did one of those shows in Eugene, where Mr. Armstrong, when he came up to that six-month night and day study, you know, he was studying. That was back in 1926, 100 years ago. So he was going to the library and going through books, studying the old-fashioned way. Now, that happened in 1926, which was when he was, 34 years old. And he writes in his autobiography that since 18, he didn't know much about the Bible. He was studying, but he wasn't studying this book. But he said from 18 to 34, when God opened his mind, he was in the habit, the established habit of diligently studying. Now, he was studying for his career. He was studying to learn how to be a good advertising man. He wanted to make money. He wanted to be important. So he hit the books, so to speak. And then when it came to 1926, the dual challenge from his sister-in-law, his wife, it jolted him. In his wife's case, he thought it was religious fanaticism. He went into his study to try to disprove her. But, you know, God had something to work with there. Before 1926, he was ambitious. In fact, he says it in his autobiography. He was vain. He was arrogant. He was cocky. But he studied. He knew how to read. He knew how to research. He knew how to dig. And so God struck him down. It happened right during the Great Depression. He had a lot of time on his hands. And so he spent hours and hours and hours reading. I'm sure it was more than 20-page papers. And look at what came out of that lifelong study of the Holy Bible. Look at what came out from that. He says in his autobiography that he read all these biographies. He read Ben Franklin's autobiography 3 times. He read biographies about Baruch, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln. And then he says this, then there was the Apostle Paul, a man of God, who told his life experiences recorded in the Bible. Paul actually wrote about his life experiences in the Bible. That's what so much of this is. Yes, there's prophecy. Yes, there's doctrine. There's history. There's biographies in this book. In the Gospels, you get about 150 pages biographies about Jesus Christ. That's not even that big of a book. But if young people can't get through a 20-page handout, do you think they're gonna plow through 150 pages of the Gospels to learn about the Son of God, God in the flesh? Well, it's not like they can't learn even later in life, but it becomes harder. That's what the devil's doing here. He wants to make it so difficult for you to commit to God's way of life. And to do it, as I've had clips on recent programs about studying, like Herbert Armstrong studied. We've got a show on that coming out this weekend. I think it's The Key of David. Study. Mr. Armstrong was ready. He started studying the Word of God to see what God said about the Sabbath. He was curious. He was ambitious. And starting in the fall of 1926, you add humility to his character. And suddenly he was ready for God to begin to open his mind and to fill it with the truth. The first 4 books of the New Testament consist primarily of those portions of the life story of Jesus helpful to the reader. The Old Testament, Mr. Armstrong says, is replete with biographical sketches of the life experiences of many men: Noah, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Joshua, Samuel, David, Elijah, and many others. And then he says, I came to realize that the recording of one's life experiences can be inspiring and helpful to others, provided there has been something of real value in those experiences. And so happy for us, he recorded those experiences. It's in this book you see on screen. But I got to warn you, it's 1,000 pages. 1,000? Now, it's also written very plainly, without all of the scholarly language. It's very simple to understand. It's very logical. It's clear. It's chronological. It's inspiring. If we could just get more and more young people to read it, to study it, to reread it, there'd be more young people with their lives on the right track. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.